Let's go.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Tapp, and this is the DNA of Purpose podcast, where we explore purpose as a part of who we already are. We showcase awe-inspiring stories of the most purpose-driven people on the planet with the intention of giving you the tools to step into the potential of who you were always born to be. After all, it's in your DNA. Welcome to another episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast. Now, as of today, here in Sydney, we are in week two of a lockdown. Now, that, of course, doesn't make us special. Let's face it, over the last 2 years, we have all been in and out of some kind of quarantine all over the world. It has undeniably been a tough time, but as with anything, there is always a silver lining. And for me, some of that silver lining has been finding a brand new appreciation for the places that I call home. Today's guest is certainly someone who knows the inside of homes better than most. To be more specific, she not only knows how to make our homes more beautiful, but also more sustainable and tox-free. Her name is Juliette Love. She is a qualified interior designer, author, and television presenter. In fact, Juliette has recently secured herself a guest role on the Seven Network's flagship program, Better Homes and Gardens. Her television career began on Foxtel's lifestyle program, The Party Garden, where she first met her now husband, award-winning landscape designer and presenter, Charlie Albone. Juliette has also been a regular guest on The Morning Show on Channel 7, hosting a series entitled Amazing Homes and as a style expert on national current affairs programs. Now, alongside working as a television presenter, Juliette still remains a sought-after interior designer and stylist. And for the last 5 years, she's written regular columns for News Corp, and she even has her own book, which is aptly named Love Style. So, in today's conversation, we literally went around the world and back with regards to style and sustainability. We, of course, diversed into beauty and aesthetics, which I think is so important in understanding how we create influence to change the world. But we also explored all of the trends that are redefining sustainability and green interior design. The other thing about Julia is she also has a passion for health and nutrition after being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and has recently studied at the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, NYC, to become a qualified health and nutrition coach. So with that in mind, she's also passionate about the creation of symbiotic homes and chemical-free environments. So without further delay, if you are sat there in your living room or with your laptop in your kitchen, take a good look around your home because your perception of your space is about to evolve in a wonderful way. Now, they say that world change starts in the home, and in the case of today's conversation, that statement couldn't be more true. Welcome, Juliette Love, to the DNA of Purpose podcast. Juliette Love, it is so lovely to have you join me on the DNA of Purpose podcast. Welcome to the studio via Zoom, buzzing in here.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be chatting to you.
Now, look, over the last 2 years on the podcast, I've often had like a go-to first question, which I haven't done for a while, but today I'm actually sort of launching a new look podcast, which everyone will find out a little bit more about in the coming weeks. So with that in mind, I wanted to kick off with a brand new first question for you today that we'll be continuing to explore over the course of the podcast, but you're the first one. So to frame this question up for you a little bit, at Future Crunch, we have an ethos of what we call intelligent optimism. And it's the idea that we have the ability, I guess, to design a more hopeful and beautiful future today with the tools that we currently have available. So with that in mind, what trend or idea have you come across within your field of work or that you have been currently, you know, thinking about or pondering that you feel has the most potential to create a better future?
Well, first of all, I love this whole philosophy of yours. And I think in my industry, I've been seeing a big shift away from mass-produced furniture. So we did see, you know, lots of the same stuff. Now we're kind of moving back towards more artisan-produced furniture, things that are handcrafted, and things that will kind of stand the test of time. So they're not so disposable, so to speak, which I think is really lovely. And, you know, people are kind of looking for more character in their home. So I think shopping outside of those normal, you know, big commercial spaces and going to markets or antique, you know, flea markets or antique stores and things like that. And then that ends up having a big impact for the future because, you know, you're using things that are more sustainable, that will last, that are more economical, that kind of thing.
Awesome. I love that. So we're all going to have to go and run along to the flea markets or back to the antique store and repurpose and redesign our houses.
Well, yeah. And I don't think, I mean, the other thing is you don't have to completely start from scratch. You can combine the two. And we, you know, I've done that in my own home. I do have pieces that are, you know, or were mass produced. And then I have other pieces that are more kind of unique. And I think, so you don't sort of have to feel like you need to go out and just, and change everything. It can be a slow process. And I think it's quite nice to mix things up a bit as well. You get kind of an eclectic look if you do that.
Awesome. Love that. So, Julia, in a conversation about, you know, how one goes about discovering their life purpose, I think there is often power in looking back and understanding how all of the dots connect to lead us to a certain point. As a child and growing up, were you always obsessed with styling and design, or was that something that organically unfolded as you got older?
Well, I think I was always creative and I always had an interest in style, but I think it was the influence of my mum and my grandmother. So my mum is actually a qualified interior designer, but she never practiced. She just sort of used the...
She just loved it.
She just loved it.
Yep.
So our home was always lovely and she took a lot of pride in that. And I think that was definitely an influence for me. But then even more so than that, my late grandmother, my mum's mum, she was very glamorous and very much into creating a beautiful home. And so for me, that's kind of where I discovered how important it is that, well, how important your surroundings are. And she used to have a lot of, it was very sort of opulent. She had wallpaper everywhere and gilt furniture that had been hand-painted and beautiful artworks. And her home really told a story. And I think for me, that's kind of where I found my initial inspiration.
And how did that play out for you as a kid? I'm just trying to imagine what Jet was like. And Jet is your nickname, given we are mates and go back quite some time, you're going to hear that slip out every now and then. But talk to me about you as a kid. How did that play out? Did you make things? Did you paint? What did that look like?
Yes. Well, I am an only child, and so my parents both worked full time, and so I was very often having to create my own entertainment. And so that very often would look like, you know, I would do lots of drawings, and I loved paint, any kind of paint. I used to paint with watercolors when I was little. I also loved reading, and that really, I think, helped with cultivating kind of, you know, an imagination and being able to sort of visualize things, even if they weren't right in front of me at that time. And I just used to love, I remember my grandmother's house was so sort of whimsical and beautiful. I used to just love going there, which I did do fairly often. And just kind of, yeah, just letting my imagination take me away. It was, you know, she had beautiful teacups and gorgeous, everything told a story, which was really nice.
Oh, I love that. So let's talk a little more about your professional journey. I had a bit of a look over your biography, and I know that career-wise, you got your big break scoring a job with Vogue Living before going on to study design at the prestigious Commercial Arts Training College. Eventually, this led you to start your own design business, aptly named Love Style, which is the perfect name for your business. And your mission within Love Style is to show people the difference a beautiful environment can make to your life. I want to unpack this idea further. What difference can a beautiful environment make to our lives as individuals, but also, I guess, as communities as well?
Yeah, it's so important. So I think, you know, anyone would know if you walk into a room that is dark and overcrowded or, you know, cluttered and it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel nice to walk into that room. But if you walk into a room that's light and bright and airy and tells a story and is exciting, an exciting place to be in, that has, you know, it has a really big impact psychologically on you. So I think for me, when I realized that as sort of a young adult, that's really kind of ignited a spark in me to want to help other people create homes and spaces that, you know, really made them feel good and spoke to them and inspired them. And for different areas of your home, obviously you want to focus on different things. You want the bedroom to be really calming, so you use certain colors in there. You might use, you know, soft blues or calming tones. Soft greens are really good in bedrooms as well. But then in an area where you want to be a little bit more inspired, you might be, like say at home office, you might want to use some colors that really fire you up, you know, colors that have, that speak to you from your childhood or something. So I think that has such a big impact, just the things around you and surrounding yourself with things that you love or things that, you know, that remind you of something special or good or whatever, really.
And, I mean, I mentioned in my first question, actually, the power of creating a vision for something better and yes. How that inspires action to create that. Do you think, when you think about this idea of beautiful environments, do you think that the environment does actually have the ability to shift behaviour? To shift how we show up as individuals?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. I think, you know, if your home brings you down, so you come home and it's a chore to, you've got stuff everywhere and it's a chore to be in the space, that can definitely take you down. And then that then snowballs into how you treat other people and how you, you know, how you speak to other people, like the other people in your household, whoever it might be, if it's family or people that you're living with. You know, it's about being kind of conscious of your surroundings and creating, putting things in place that make it easy for you to be organized, keep things looking clean and calm. Because you're much more focused if your house is organized. Mm. And it might seem like, oh, I'm too busy to organize my house. But if you just do one task at a time and break it down, it's actually not that hard. And then after you've, you know, created an organized space, to keep it that way is literally just a matter of like a few minutes a day of just putting things where they need to be. Mm.
I ask you, are you all about the minimalist approach? Is it the less is more?
It's funny. I certainly would say I've had to move away from that. I'm a maximalist, I would say, by nature. I love lots of things and I love things around me. I think that's because I'm exposed to so many things through my work, through styling. And
yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's like a kid in a candy store. Where do I start?
So I'm like, and I used to have to collect a lot of things to be able to use on jobs for styling jobs, you know, freelance styling for magazines and things. So I think, I've just lost my train of thought. What was I saying? So I have lots of things around me, but I think I've had to learn over time to kind of, for flow and to be able to focus at home in my home, I can't have too much stuff. And I think part of that as well is when you have children.
That was my next question.
Kids come with a lot of stuff. And so when I had the kids, I certainly had to take that up a notch and be much more organized. And I would say now, I wouldn't call myself a minimalist, but I think I'm much more conscious about what I bring into the home and what I actually need. Yeah.
Awesome. So let's jump back in time and have a bit of a chat about The Party Garden. So this was a show created for the Lifestyle Channel, and as you were actually asked to be the co-host with your husband Charlie, and this was not only your break into TV, but you also obviously met the love of your life. So since then, I think it's fairly evident that you've established yourself as a global authority in the world of style and design. However, when you look back on those early Party Garden days, did you have any like sense of inner knowing that you were literally walking through Destiny's Door and that everything in your life was literally about to change in that moment, in that chapter?
It's so funny. I had absolutely no idea. And I think that's the thing about hindsight. You just don't know, do you? So at the time, I knew it was a big break, but I didn't realise how much that really would change the direction of my life. And as you said, I met Charlie, who is the love of my life, and he's been such an amazing influence in my life. But yeah, at the time, I certainly didn't realise the impact that that would have. And I think you mentioned before about connecting all the dots and how that relates to purpose. And I think when I look back now, I can really see how some of the things I went through that maybe were challenging or weren't the best times, it all makes sense when you look at the big picture, and I learned so much from those things. And I think that's how we all grow. You know, if you go through some challenging times or whatever, and then that's how you kind of reach a better place at the end of the day. But yeah, that Party Garden time was a really happy time for me. But I guess certainly didn't realize how it was going to have such an impact, you know, career-wise as well as personally.
Did you intend to get into television right from the beginning, or was that something that just was quite organic as well?
It's funny. I have a girlfriend who was a television producer at the time with Channel 7, and she actually said to me, you should think about getting into TV. I think I might have done a segment for her. It wasn't something really that I thought about before that. And then I actually, the Party Garden kind of, I fell into it because it was through a network, someone that I knew was working on the show. And she said, oh, you should come and audition for this show. And so I did. And the rest is history. But it wasn't something really that I set out to do, certainly not when I decided to be an interior designer. It wasn't like I went, I'm going to be an interior designer and I want to do TV with that. It was just it was just how it kind of unfolded.
So I've already mentioned today that this podcast is very focused on the purposeful creation of a better world. And with that in mind, I'm a firm believer in the power of imagination to do just that. And I think you referenced imagination before. And again, if we can't imagine a beautiful future, we can't make the decision to create one. Talk to me about your creative process. What is the role of imagination in styling? And from there, what's your process for bringing your vision to life, for making that real?
Yeah, so imagination is so important. I think as a creative person, that's really what you hold on to. It's your vision. So from an early age, I really had quite a vivid imagination. I can see that in my children now. They've got very strong imaginations, which is really nice. But I think for a successful outcome when you're designing, you need to kind of harness that and put it down on paper. So for me, I like to be organized and have a plan in place for every job that I do. And often that is creating vision boards, whether that's on a computer or it's a one that I make with actual fabric samples and things like that. But I find once I put it all down on paper and start to collect things, it becomes more real, and you can kind of see where there might be gaps, and you get a better outcome at the end because you've created there's a plan in place. Mm-hmm. So you know what you're going to get at the end. Whereas I think if you just use your imagination, you have this brilliant idea and you visualize the room, how it's going to be, it sometimes doesn't always work out like that unless you kind of put it down on paper as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's about setting the intention and then looking at the tools and what you actually need to bring that to life and, exactly. and to create that strategy around it.
Exactly. And I think sometimes what I often find with clients, they might have a few different visions in their head of what they want. And I think by putting things down and creating vision boards, it really helps to solidify exactly what they want. So there might be, you know, a few looks that are completely opposing. And so then by putting down the things that they really love, it's you start to see a theme emerge and then it's a much better outcome.
Awesome. So over the past 2 years, especially in the midst of a global pandemic, we have seen a few mega trends emerge. And one of those has been that we're spending a lot more time at home. We're working from home. We're juggling kids. We're doing all of this stuff. And there's really a fluidity to the way in which we live. And the silos between work and play are really beginning to blur a lot more and to dissolve. Have these trends influenced the manner in which we design space, and if so, how?
Yes, I definitely think the last 12 months have influenced design in quite a few ways. I think people are placing a lot more importance on their homes, and because we're spending so much time there. And I think in terms of design, we're wanting to make our homes as beautiful but also as functional as possible, because homes have to be so many things these days. They're, you know, people are working from home, they need spaces for their children, they need a functional group area, family area, like the kitchen and living area. So I think we're seeing a real shift towards creating comfortable homes that are also functional. And like I said before, a lot of people are moving back towards more appreciating more, artisan-based products rather than just getting in, you know, things for the sake. But I think the past 12 months have really shifted people's priorities, and I think we're looking more at making conscious choices for the environment but also for our own health. And I think it's definitely had a big impact on the way we live.
I was actually speaking to an urban planner who's on the Future Crunch team, actually, and Mel was telling me they're actually putting in like sliding walls to create like multi-functional spaces, so you can be like a living room by day, you know, by night, an office by day, and all of this sort of stuff is coming into play as well.
Yeah, absolutely, to create different zones. And I think even if you're in a space, like if you're in an apartment, you may not be able to put in a sliding wall, but there are other ways around that. You can put in screens, or you can just even create zones in one room by the placement of your furniture. You know, you can put a rug down and a sofa at one end, and then the other end might be the kids' playroom. But you can, when you walk into the room, you can see there's a clear delineation between the two spaces, so you can kind of use them separately, which I think is really nice. Yeah, multifunctional spaces.
And I mean, while we're on this subject, I'm curious to know, are you starting to see a lot more greenery in homes? And maybe this is a little bit in Charlie's field of expertise, but I can't help but wonder, especially when we're looking at themes around rewilding of cities and we're seeing a lot more green buildings emerge, whether that's actually also being weaved into the interior design space.
That is a huge trend at the moment, which I absolutely love. And being married to a landscape designer / horticulturalist, we started putting houseplants inside years ago, but now it is a really, really big trend. And I think it's brilliant because it really brings a space to life visually, but also, you know, plants clean the air. So it's they're really good to have inside. So we have houseplants everywhere in our house. We have them in bathrooms. I've got two behind me. I've got one here.
Yeah. And I also was watching a little segment you guys did on Valentine's Day on the morning show. And not only have you got beautiful plants indoors, you have the most wild hedge and gardens and this beautiful country home that I want to come and visit really soon. So
you absolutely have to come and visit. But yes, that's Charlie's happy place. We've got 5 acres on the Central Coast, and we have about an acre of garden, and then the rest is kind of fields and paddocks. But the acre of garden is just, I lose Charlie to the garden every time we go up there, because we park the car in the driveway and then he's in the garden and I don't see him for a few days because he just loves it. And it's really lovely for the children as well. And I think there's something very healing and therapeutic about being immersed in nature.
Yeah.
It's so important. And for the kids to get their hands dirty and, you know, really appreciate nature and appreciate last weekend, they were looking at all the bugs on the plants and just see how that, you know, how the biodiversity of things and how it's all, you know, it all
everything's connected.
Everything's connected, exactly.
And I guess just reminding them, but all of us really, that we are nature. We're a part of that.
Exactly. And that's what I always tell them. And just to have respect for nature and for the plants and the birds and the bees and the insects, yeah.
And beautiful that you can bring that into the home as well.
Yes. And for me, that's really important, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So while we're on, you know, the subject of change in general, I think it's fair to say that from a design perspective, we're becoming a lot more conscious of making environmentally friendly decisions, some of which we've just discussed. So what I'm curious to know is if I was starting from scratch, like with a brand new home or brand new office space, and I wanted to create the most sustainable space possible for my colleagues, my family, my friends, what would I be looking to do first? Like, where should I start?
Okay, so if you're starting from scratch with a house, that's a pretty big job.
Yeah.
And I think there are builders now who specialize in building environmentally friendly homes. And that's a lot easier now because back in the day, even only a few years ago, it was very hard to find products that were sustainable or were eco-friendly. But now there are more and more manufacturers of those things, which is a really good thing to see. If you were wanting to just start room by room in your house and just, you know, start to be more sustainable about your choices, again, there's some really great manufacturers. There are some really good Australian furniture designers who are creating beautiful things using completely sustainable materials, recycled plastics, and fabrics that haven't been doused in masses of fire retardants and the other chemicals that they usually put on these things. So, there are some really good ones. I think Jardin is one that's in Melbourne. They do beautiful furniture that is supposed to last a lifetime. And it's really nice to see, even some of the mass suppliers like West Elm, which is an American company who are here now, they're doing a range of sustainable furniture, which is really nice to see. So you can't walk in there and everything's sustainable, but they're obviously conscious that that's where the direction they need to go.
The world's going,
yeah, a demand for that. And so they're creating this range that is sustainable, which is great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So while, you know, if we're looking at your life from the outside looking in and having done some friendly stalking, you know, I've had a read through everything that's available on the internet. And I mean, I'm happy to consider you one of my friends. So we know each other quite well. But I'm interested to know, like, who is Juliet when we untame you, when we strip you back, when we take off all of the design and, you know, all of the wonderful things about who you are and get to the raw, vulnerable parts. Who are you when, you know, untamed, raw and real, and what does courage look like to you?
So that's a really good question. And it's really funny thinking about yourself like that, because I don't think we often do that. Like, I don't think we often reflect much about ourselves, but for me, when you ask me about courage, it kind of makes me think about a time that was a bit tricky for me. So about 5 years ago, I just had our second son and I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which was fairly life-changing at the time. I didn't know anything about diabetes. I just thought diabetes was something that you got if you ate too much sugar. But type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition. And so I went overnight from being perfectly healthy to needing about 8 insulin injections a day and requiring 24/7 management of my blood sugar level. And so that was quite quite difficult at the time, especially with two very small children, having a husband who at the time was traveling for about 10 months of the year, so he really wasn't around very much. So I really kind of had to find an inner courage and some strength to power on. And for me, a lot of that, I mean,
that's a lot, because I've got one baby, or now she's 2.5 now. And just, I mean, the postpartum period with one baby, like, was the most vulnerable, raw period of my life, without adding diabetes and husband being away to that equation. So I just want to, I guess, make space for the enormity of what you're talking about there.
Yeah. And I think at the time, you just have to keep going, because when you've got kids, you can't stop. So I think I just had to keep powering on. And I think the thing that got me through that, I have really strong faith. I'm quite spiritual. And so I think I'm a Christian. So I think my faith really helped me through that and brought me a hope that I don't think anything else could have. And then having supportive friends and family really made a huge difference as well. So I think if I'd really been on my own, that would have been what would have tipped me over the edge. But having supportive family around made a really big difference. But there were some scary moments with insulin. You can kind of, if you have too much, you can pass out. And if you don't have enough, it can cause all kinds of damage to your organs. So there's a very fine line. And at first I found it very hard to find that balance. And so there were a few scary moments where the kids were tiny and I was almost conked out on the floor. But I think, those things only make you stronger at the end of the day. If you get through them, that's, you know, it's like I was talking about before, the challenging times really are the times that make you grow, I think. If you're just comfortable all the time, you just cruise along. But the hard times are what kind of help you grow as a person, as a human.
Definitely, definitely. And look, in reflecting on that, how did that time reconnect you to a sense of purpose? Did you find yourself, you know, when you come so close to, I'm not going to say the edge, but a situation like that where you have these two little babies, you're conked out on the floor. Like that kind of makes you question your morality, right? And your role in life, and what am I doing here? Like, how did that influence you? Did it lead you into asking those bigger questions? Yeah,
and I think for sure those moments do make you do make you reassess your life and reprioritize. And I think definitely, and even the last 12 months, I think the last 12 months have really kind of made me stop in my tracks as well, like for a lot of people as well, and reprioritize and just slow down. We live this fast-paced life that is just, you know, nonstop, rushing here, rushing there, trying to fit so much into our days. We're working, we're looking after kids, it is never ending, and we get this constant stream of news and information at us all the time. And I think the last 12 months we've all had to kind of slow down a bit.
Definitely.
And that's been a really nice thing. So I think, yeah, definitely the diabetes diagnosis made me really prioritize family and what is really important. And then and also look at how I'm spending my time when I'm working, and is that valuable, and am I contributing to the world, to its betterment,
Is kind of a segue to my next question, and I am dancing around a little bit here with the questions, but I was watching the morning show, and I noted at the end of that you mentioned that you kind of are in a bit of a career shift at the moment and potentially heading into the world of health and nutrition, and that you've been studying. And was that period, that chapter, going through the diabetes, did that kind of lead you to where you're at now in the career transition you're looking at?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that, and I always think when things, you know, challenging things happen, there's always a silver lining. And for me, one of those silver linings was that the diabetes really made me look at my health and the health of my family. And I'd always been a fairly relatively healthy person and thought, you know, ate the right things and in you know, fairly balanced. But then I really wanted to find out more about how I could be as healthy as I could for my children, and also how I could, you know, feed them and nurture them in the right ways. So I said one day to Charlie, oh, I think I might, because I was becoming more and more interested in it, and I kept talking to him all the time about, oh, I saw this the other day on the internet, or I read this magazine or this book about this. you know, new health trend. And then one day I said to him, look, I think I'm actually going to study this. Do you think I'm crazy? And he, and Charlie knows me so well. And I was expecting him to say, what are you talking about? You're an interior designer. Why would you study nutrition at this point? And he actually said to me, you know what? I think you should definitely do it. You're so passionate about this. Mm. And so I did. So I studied online for 12 months through a school called the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, which is in New York. It's all online. And I was a bit skeptical about that at first. I thought, oh gosh, is this going to be, I didn't know what the quality of the content would be like. And as it turned out, it was absolutely amazing. They had global leaders on cutting edge health as the lecturers. And it was just, it was so informative. It was brilliant. And so now, so I finished that. So I'm a qualified health and nutrition coach. And for a minute there, I did think that I would go further down that path. But now that's sort of, I finished that about a year ago. And I know now that my true passion is interiors. But it's really nice to have that knowledge of the health and wellness stuff. And
totally.
I think
you continue. I was going to say, just in having a few conversations with you, it's certainly something that you're bringing in back into how you style spaces, because I know that you're really passionate about really ensuring that there are no toxins in the home and that you're creating a healthy space.
Exactly. And when I first told people that I was doing the nutrition and that I was going to try and combine them, they were like, what? How do those two tie together? But in my mind, they really do, because having a healthy home is so important. It's just like I was saying with having a beautiful home that inspires you. It's also so important to have a healthy home. And by healthy, I mean minimizing toxins. So we're apparently, I don't know the exact figures, but there are thousands and thousands of new chemicals that humans haven't been exposed to ever before in human history. And right now we are just, they're everywhere. They're in cleaning products. They're in, you know, in upholstery, fabrics, in your clothes. We're literally surrounded by them in all the products we use on ourselves. And so I think if in your home you can minimize those things, it makes a big difference to your overall health. And so, yeah, you mentioned houseplants before. Houseplants are a big one because they really do clean the air.
Yeah.
They also just make you feel good. Water filters, all that kind of stuff. And then making conscious choices with your furniture and decor. Like I said before, there's some really good Australian companies, even because a lot of kids' furniture is plastic, but there are a few companies doing great things in the kids' furniture space. And yeah, so that's really nice to see. So I am kind of combining the two things.
I think it makes so much sense to me, and I'll tell you why, for two reasons. What I have learned around working in the field of business influence is that people who do really create an effective space for themselves do so because they've found that niche intersection, which generally sits between two kind of macro areas. So if you look at like Jamie Oliver, for example, you've got cooking and kids. Just professionally from that perspective, I think it's a great idea. But more than that, if we're coming back to this idea of nature and the nature within, we are nature, so therefore we need to create symbiotic environments that feed our biology, you know? And so it comes down to that rewilding trend. It's not just about cities, it's about our homes. And if we can rewild our homes, we're creating a natural environment, which is where our body is designed to thrive and have enhanced well-being and health is in that environment, right? So it seems to me like a really obvious connection.
Yeah, well, actually, I couldn't have said that better myself. That's you've hit the nail on the head. That is all so true. And really interesting from a business point of view. I didn't realise that with the two niche areas, like Jamie Oliver and...
Well, yeah, I can't claim that one, but my mentor is a lady called Julie Masters, and she talks about what's called the influence intersection. And it's that idea that because of the internet, because there's so much white noise out there, it is nearly impossible to own like a macro space. It's really hard for you to own, say, all of interior design, but you can really own a space that sits in the intersection of two areas. So in your case, it would be, you know, styling and design alongside health and well-being, and then really hone in on that one space and translate that gap for your audience. So yeah, there you go. A few tips and influence in the middle of the podcast. But
it's so good to hear. I'm very happy to hear that.
Absolutely. And I think it's what we need to do more and more, because again, in coming back to the intention of this podcast, which is how do we make a more abundant and sustainable and beautiful planet, a big part of that is around how we rewild and bring back to nature our environments. And that's the reason I wanted to speak to you today, is because your world is styling. But I love even more so that you have the health and well-being aspect, because that is actually what it's about, that we are nature. So let's create nature within our spaces in order to fulfill and sustain our own health and well-being and that of the planet.
Exactly.
Amazing. Yay, how exciting. So this is probably a nice segue to my next, I don't know if this is a question or a comment, but I would suggest everyone does go and check out your website, Lovestyle, and I'll get you to share the URL. And I came across a beautiful article there that you had done on something called Kintsugi, the Japanese art of make, do, and mend. And I couldn't help but feel, having now heard some part of your story, that this is maybe an approach you've applied to your own life and in your life design as well as your house design.
Yeah, I absolutely love this philosophy, and I think it's so important nowadays, because as I've said, it's so easy to overconsume. It's so easy, if you need something, you just rush out to the local shopping mall and you buy it. But what happens is we end up with all this meaningless stuff, we end up with too much stuff, and that actually ends up being draining. Like, it's not good for us to have so much stuff around. And I think back in the day, in our grandparents' day, I remember my grandmother, it was always about make, do, and mend, because they didn't have access to all these things that we have access to now. And so they would be forced to make, do, and mend. But I think it's such it's a better way to be, because it forces you to slow down and make considered choices and make better choices. It's an important philosophy for me. But having said that, you know, I try and do my best with that, but we all get busy and we all sometimes have to reach for the instant fix. But where you can, I think it's important to try and, you know, just make conscious choices.
Absolutely. And I love this philosophy in coming back to where we started today, with that idea of repurposing things rather than going out and buying new stuff. The world doesn't need more stuff. So how can we literally make, do, and mend what we have in order to create something new and to design and style something new?
Yeah, and it can be so gratifying. For example, I, you know, found some beautiful chairs recently that were vintage, and they just needed some TLC and some new upholstery. Most of this stuff you can do yourself as well. You know, find some beautiful upholstery and then look up a YouTube video about how to attach the fabric to the frame of the chair. But doing something like that, an exercise like that, is so gratifying and gives you so much. And every time you walk through your dining room, you see those chairs, they bring you joy. So it's much more, you know, you get much more out of that than going and just buying some chairs that, you know, 5,000 other people have.
Yeah.
That same ones without any character or any story to them.
Yeah. So I've come to my last question for the day. When I reflect on your brand, you're someone that spent much of your time making spaces beautiful, and spaces that in their very design have the power to change the world, because within each space there's a story told in the furniture, in the artwork, in the beautiful plants, and by the people who inhabit the spaces. So with that in mind, at this particular point in human history, what story do you think needs to be told and needs to be heard or even styled in order to create a more peaceful and more abundant future for the people and the planet? What story matters to you the most?
That's such a good question. We've been given this beautiful planet. Like, this earth that we live on is just magnificent. It's awe-inspiring. And so for me, I think if each of us can just show some respect for that, for the earth and for the planet and how beautiful it is, and live peacefully and live with, what's the word, live gently, I think.
Yeah.
That is so important to me. And
I love that. Live gently. Yeah,
live gently and just, or live lightly, you know, just don't, you know, try and make conscious choices that respect the earth and respect other people. And I think your home can certainly reflect those choices. And often it seems like some of the world's problems are overwhelming and that as individuals, we can't do anything. But I think through our own homes, we can make a difference. And even if it's a small difference, it all helps.
Mm.
And so the choices you make in your home, I think, can have an impact and can help you live gently. You know, live with respect and kindness to the planet and to other people.
Beautiful. Julia, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Where can we find you? Where can we look up Love Style and learn more about what you do? Your website's fab.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So it's www.lovestyle.com.au. And so I've got lots of content on there that might help people with when they're decorating their homes.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me on the DNA of Purpose podcast.
You're so welcome. It was so lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast. If you'd like to follow along, please do at the DNA of Purpose on Instagram. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is the DNA of Purpose with Rebecca Tapp. And if you'd like to keep up to date with all of our team's news and events, you can jump onto my website, which is rebeccatapp.com. That is rebeccatapp with two P's.com. Also, if you love what we do, then please do leave us a review. It would be greatly appreciated. Or if you'd like to share your inspiration with our team, we'd love to hear from you. Please do reach out, say hi at your favourite social media hangout.